The other shoe on the new federal tax law will drop in about a month. By most accounts, that's the first time you should see some difference in your take-home pay. Congress passed the tax bill before Christmas, cutting rates for corporations and some individual taxpayers. It was a Republican-only party with not a single Democrat voting for the tax bill, and there have been plenty of critics of the legislation, including the Oregon Center for Public Policy, where Daniel Hauser is a policy analyst and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm happy to be on.
So tell us about the Oregon Center for Public Policy and what it's generally about.
The Oregon Center for Public Policy, the organization I work for, focuses really heavily on figuring out how public policies will actually impact working Oregonians, the middle class, and poor Oregonians. And so we do a lot of research and analysis. We dig deeply into both governmental data and that we can find really anywhere else, and try and understand what will happen to the paychecks and to the lives of Oregonians based on both state and federal policy changes.
Is there a particular end of the political spectrum you find yourself on more often than not?
Well, we're a nonpartisan independent think tank, but we do focus really heavily on the impacts to low and middle income Oregonians and workers. So it's not uncommon for us to be categorized as progressive, and that's something that we're willing to hold the mantle on, because we do really believe deeply that a lot of the policies that best impact or have the best impact for working Oregonians are those that really prioritize them, that ensure they have sufficient wages and sufficient benefits.
I want to let our listeners know we did invite the Cascade Policy Institute on as well to join the program, but they didn't have anybody available for this time, this day. So we're with Daniel Hauser from the Oregon Center for Public Policy. This tax effort from Congress, I hesitate to apply that term other than tax right away, because it originally billed as tax reform, but it became all about cuts. I mean, does the Oregon Center for Public Policy support tax reform by some concept of it?
I think that there is a version of tax reform that would be really helpful to see, and that would be one that would expand important policies for the working class, like the earned income tax credit that goes to working families and provides a refundable credit that they then can use to spend on the needs they have, catching up on bills, paying for their rent, et cetera. There's a variety of ways that the tax code could also be simplified that would really help out people, you know, that would really help it achieve that goal that President Trump and others claim this would, of being able to put your taxes on a postcard. I think that simplifying our taxes does have a lot of values, but that's certainly not what we saw with this Republican effort. And to do it would be generally something that would probably be much more bipartisan and would be something that would actually try and improve workers and the lower middle classes more so than big businesses and the richest.
Would bipartisan have made this a much slower process, do you think?
Probably, because it would have actually required negotiation and conversation. In this circumstance, the only negotiations were happening between different big businesses and special interests, not between the parties or between advocates for workers or really anyone who isn't such a clear beneficiary of this bill. And that was a risk that I think the Republican Party was unwilling to take. They really needed to get a win for their own political base. And I think that's what we saw with this bill, is it was pushed through very quickly. And really, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting about it is that there was bipartisan opposition to this bill in the House.
So you saying essentially that the Republicans needed to get something before the end of 2017 just to be able to say the year wasn't a total loss or something?
I think that's the slightly more cynical view that I tend to harbor sometimes. I mean, I think that the part of the reason was that the Republicans lost a Senate seat in Alabama, and because of that, their margin of votes that they could lose on this bill was going to change in 2018, as we've seen Senator Doug Jones was brought in this week. And so for them, if they could get this through and get this done in 2017, then it would be easier for them to pass and be easier for them to point at as a success in the midterm elections.
There was a statement put out by Chuck Sheketoff, the boss of the Oregon Center for Public Policy, after the Senate passed its original version, and his statement read, "Oregonians who are poor, seniors, have disabilities, belong to communities of color, and other vulnerable populations stand to suffer the most." Did things change later on, question one? And question two is, how would they suffer the most?
There were some changes that did improve the bill and some that didn't. One of the things that we were critical of was that the one of the earlier versions of the tax reform would have eliminated the medical expense deduction, which, as many of your listeners may know, the standard deduction is what most taxpayers use, especially lower and middle income taxpayers. And itemized deductions are what one takes if they're not using the standard. So if they have mortgage interest, if they have large charitable contributions, state and local taxes. And another one is the medical expense deduction. And the medical expense deduction is one that is probably the most progressive, although it still isn't a particularly progressive policy. But they would have proposed eliminating it, and that would have pushed a lot of families of very modest means that have really high medical expenses really into a much tougher spot, and made it harder for them to continue to afford things like end-of-life care or cancer treatments or other really costly things.
But the final version did not change that?
The final version did not include that provision. Unfortunately, there are an array of other provisions that have been included that really do prioritize the wealthiest at the expense of working families. And to give you one example of that, Republican leadership and a lot of thought leaders in the Republican conservative movements have been pointing very clearly at the need to begin cutting back and quote-unquote reforming our Medicaid and nutrition assistance and other social service programs now that they have this big budget deficit. And this budget deficit was created, the newest estimates are it's around $1.8 trillion after including the costs of debt. That particular piece of the deficit, that $1.8 trillion, was created because they were prioritizing high-income and business tax cuts over real practical tax reform that would have helped working Oregonians.
More analysis and some critique of the tax policy plan that emerged from Congress just before Christmas from Daniel Hauser, policy analyst at the Oregon Center for Public Policy. When we return to the Jefferson Exchange, you can join the conversation too, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about new federal tax law, getting some analysis from Daniel Hauser, who's a policy analyst for the Oregon Center for Public Policy, which generally looks out for working people and people with less means in the state of Oregon. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts about the tax bill and questions for Daniel and his analysis. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, one of the reasons we were seeking out somebody to talk about the effect of the tax law in Oregon is Oregon has some particular irons in the fire with deductions for state and local taxes, or SALT, SALT, as people have begun referring to those. What happened with this bill, Daniel?
Yeah, there were early proposals to eliminate the state and local tax deduction, and thankfully us and many other advocates pushed back on that and were able to make it to where the state and local tax deduction in the final bill caps the amount that can be taken by individual taxpayers as an itemized deduction at $10,000 of their state income taxes in Oregon or their local property taxes. And one of the impacts of this limitation is that because Oregon relies more heavily on the income tax than the sales tax, and you can only take either the sales or income tax historically on
no combination of them?
You can do a combination of income tax or sales and property. And so that's where it gets kind of confusing. But one of the results of needing to select between those two is that states that use both generally get a smaller benefit, and states that are more heavily reliant on one, generally the income tax, end up getting larger average deductions from the state and local tax deductions. So in Oregon, a third of taxpayers use the SALT deduction in the most recent year we have data, and the average that they deducted was over $12,000. And so it's very much the case that this cap at $10,000 will allow a lot of people to still deduct the full amount they previously did. But a lot of people will end up receiving tax increases as a result of that provision.
So from either a tax policy or a revenue standpoint, what is the argument for limiting or eliminating such deductions?
Well, I think that the SALT deduction is one that often does flow to higher income folks. It is one that, generally speaking, you have to itemize your deductions, and you have to have pretty decent amounts of income, at least be in the middle class, if not somewhat higher, to have high enough income taxes and to be able to own a home that has high enough property taxes, since that's based on the value of your home. And so one of the reforms that would be positive of the SALT would be to refocus it in a way that does provide greater benefit to low- and middle-income Oregonians. But the way they've done it really does hit some middle-class Oregonians. And many middle-upper-class Oregonians are going to be facing really rather substantial tax increases potentially.
From what you've been able to discover in your research, was there some knowledge about which states would be affected the most? And in fact, was there some targeting, as some blue state members of Congress have charged?
You know, I can't speak to whether or not they were going after blue states as a result of targeting the SALT deduction. What I can say, though, is that because of how they did it, it does impact blue states more so than red or more Republican states. And, in fact, Oregonians use the SALT deduction more than all but five other states. And those are traditionally, almost all of them are traditionally very Democratic states.
All right, so I want to circle back around to the effect on that later on, but let's break down the effects on a couple of different areas. First, let's talk about individuals. In Oregon, who gets a tax cut, and does anybody not?
It is very much the case that some Oregonians will see tax increases. One of the parts that makes this more complicated is that many of the tax cuts for individuals that are included in this bill actually end up expiring after a number of years. So in 2027, many Oregonians, we estimate that about one in five Oregonians will actually have a tax increase relative to current law. And what's interesting about that, and it sounds like we'll maybe get into it in greater detail soon, but corporations and the cuts to the corporate rates are actually permanent. So we have temporary cuts for workers, aren't necessarily the best design cuts, but for some people it will be a tax cut. Compared with a situation where the cuts for corporations are both larger and permanent. It really shows, I think, the priorities of this tax bill were to provide cuts to businesses, and particularly big businesses, and not to their workers.
Now, as it had been discussed quite a long time ago, and several times over the years, in fact, but you know, more recently coming into to this current session of Congress, the discussion was, yes, let's lower the corporate rates, but let's make sure we close the loopholes, too. So the corporate rates have certainly been lowered from, what, 35% to 21%?
Correct.
And what were the loopholes closed?
There was very modest shifts in some of the business tax expenditures, the loopholes. Some business interest deductions were scaled back, although some investment, the depreciation that you can deduct on qualified purchases as a business was actually increased in some cases. And so it was really a hodgepodge of different tax cuts and potentially tax increases for businesses. But generally speaking, the level of impact to businesses from removing some of those tax breaks is fairly modest, whereas the significant tax cuts on net are far more beneficial to most businesses. And it's something that we're watching very closely, and we're really worried about is trying to figure out how different corporations are going to remanage and put their accountants and lawyers to work to figure out how they can further avoid paying their full share of taxes.
Just philosophically, does the Oregon Center for Public Policy have a position about whether it is patriotic to pay taxes or whether it is just smart to not?
I think that our perspective is very much one that the tax system should support the services that Oregonians need. I believe strongly, and I think our organization does too, that having proper education for our children, having health care for our neediest, making sure that no one's starving or homeless are priorities that we should be emphasizing and that we should be funding. And we should be funding them through taxes on those most capable of paying those taxes. And I think right now what we've seen is that we're setting up cuts to those services with this tax bill, and we're asking even less from the richest and even less from corporations.
Daniel Hauser is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a policy analyst for the Oregon Center for Public Policy. We're going through the details of the tax law passed by Congress and signed by President Trump just before Christmas. going into effect now and the effect particularly on Oregon. You can join the conversation on the exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I should point out, particularly with the state and local taxes, California is affected in very much the same way Oregon is, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's interesting because more Oregonians, on average, use the SALT deduction than Californians, at least the most recent year we have data available. But they actually have larger deductions on average. So their richest often are paying even more in some cases than Oregonians. And so therefore, their actual amount that they're deducting is larger than that in Oregon.
When we were talking about corporations versus individuals, what differences does this tax law have, if any, over what the situation was before, where often people with unearned income, like from interest, pay a lower rate than, even if their overall income's high, they pay a lower rate on that versus what sometimes people working for their money will do?
Yeah, I think that's a great point to target, and there's a number of ways where there's special tax rates depending on how you earn your income. And unfortunately, what this tax bill does is reinforce the fact that people who earn their income through working, through wages, are really paying some of the highest rates. And so there was no change to the capital gains tax rate, one where you acquire profits based on the sale of goods or other intangible properties. That's unchanged. That's still a lower tax rate than the vast majority of taxpayers wound up paying. They actually provided, so there's a particular type of business separate from a C corporation that's called a pass-through business entities. And what these business entities do is they pass through on their the business profits of the business that they either own or a partner in through to their personal income taxes. And so those profits become taxable as part of their own income. They actually received a really substantial tax cut as well and could end up paying significantly less and their actual tax rate they end up owing than the average working Oregonian who is just showing up 9 to 5 and doing their job and will end up paying more in taxes than some of the business owners they're working for.
Maybe not more in total. I mean, maybe not more in total taxes, but a higher rate anyway along the way. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. No. Thanks for that clarification. And what's interesting is in some cases the shrink is not just in total dollars, which in this case, the bottom 60% of Oregonians will see around a $430 average tax cut in a couple years, is about the average, whereas the top 1% will see about a $34,000 tax cut. But even when you look at percentage terms of where do the tax cuts go, the bottom 60% will see about 15% of the total benefit. But the top 1% will actually see even more than the bottom 60% of Oregonians. They will get about $1 in $5 from this tax cut in total in 2019.
So do all the individual cuts, are they all timed to expire unless reauthorized by Congress?
Basically. There's some fairly small and more technical pieces of it that will stay in effect, but the vast majority of the changes do to the personal income taxes do sunset or expire after 2025. So going into 2026, those will be in place. And one of the ways of thinking about that is the numbers I shared before about how the bottom 60% does get a tax cut immediately. Once those expire, we look out and we estimate that in 2027, the bottom 60% of Oregonians will actually see an average tax increase of about $60. So not a significant tax increase, but it's there. And that's partially because one of the pieces that doesn't expire is that they change how they inflate or how they grow the values of certain pieces of the tax code to a different system that is less, in some ways less accurate and in many ways less generous and smaller over time. And so some of the benefits will shrink over time just as some of the tax cuts will expire once we're looking into 2026 and later.
I can't imagine that what we do in taxes at our house is that different from what a lot of people do, which is you look at your deductions and figure out if you can itemize, and if your itemized deductions don't add up to the standard deduction, you take the standard deduction. The standard deduction doubles with this law, is that correct?
Almost. It becomes very close to doubling, which is certainly an easier way to think about it. It rises to $12,000 for individual single filers and $24,000 for joint filers. And that also is indexed for inflation, as I mentioned before, and so it'll be shrinking, or it'll be growing less over time than it would be without that permanent change. And on top of that, it also sunsets. It's very much the case that if we were to pick out, you know, one or a particular piece of this tax bill that is actually on its own a good piece of policy, doubling or nearly doubling the standard deduction is something that's beneficial to most Oregonians and will help a lot of families. When put into the totality of this bill, when considered with all these other pieces, including the much, much larger tax cuts for corporations and for the richest Oregonians, it's not really a win on net, because many of the services that these same Oregonians depend on are going to end up getting slashed.
Let's talk about that. Are we talking about it from state programs or federal programs?
Many of the programs Oregonians rely on and perceive as being state programs are heavily funded by grants and other pass-through funding from the federal government.
Like Medicaid, so many, for example?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent example. Yeah.
All right, so the federal government sending this money in, and you're saying is it that there's going to be less money necessarily, or just that now that Congress has run up a larger deficit by passing this tax law, that they'll be looking to cut programs like Medicaid?
I think it's the latter. What we're looking at is a number of very clear statements by leadership in the Republican Party that this deficit will require them to cut services. I mean, in reality, if they want to balance out this deficit, they have two choices. They can either increase taxes immediately following a tax cut, which doesn't seem like it might be a priority for them. Or they can cut services, and they can cut funding levels. And we've already heard talk about how they can cut things like the Farm Bill, nutrition assistance programs, education funding. Those are all potential areas that they can cut over the next decade to balance out this big deficit hole they've blown in with their tax plan.
Daniel Hauser is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a policy analyst for the Oregon Center for Public Policy. We're talking about the new tax law. Pressure to cut programs, just in general, in numbers, I mean, which estimates on lost revenue versus economic boom generating new revenue do you adopt at the Oregon Center for Public Policy? Are the numbers less a concern than the trend?
I think the biggest issue is that we're looking at somewhere in the $1 to $2 trillion range of budget deficits. It is likely that there will be some small economic benefit, and the so-called dynamic scoring that includes those economic benefits shows that that will be fairly minimal, and that is it's highly unlikely to balance out even a significant cost of the total tax bill. So what we're looking at is, you know, if it's $1 trillion or if it's a $2 trillion tax cut at the end of 10 years, or a deficit increase at the end of 10 years, we're still going to be facing significant damage to those programs Oregonians rely on. It becomes a question of severity, and a lot of the estimates rely on pretty tenuous assumptions that we don't necessarily think are probably going to end up playing out as very accurate.
Were you surprised at all that the old mantra, and we're talking, you know, 35 years old, tax cuts pay for themselves mantra that has been disproven by economist after economist, still ended up gaining traction in this Congress?
I'm certainly not surprised. I think that there's been a reoccurring trend nationally to ignore or in some ways intentionally doubt the perspective of experts. I don't think that it's surprising, although it is discouraging, that really independent, rigorous analysis was ignored when they crafted this tax bill. One example is the claim that corporate tax cuts are going to result in workers seeing much higher wages. We've seen, again, just as you note on the impacts to the economy of these types of cuts, that academic research again and again has shown that that really isn't something that plays out, that it's a very small piece of the total tax cut might actually get passed through to workers. And we've seen that, too, already in the fact that a number of big corporations have said, you know, with this tax cut, we're going to now increase the wages of our workers. That's great. The problem is that they're potentially seeing billions of dollars in tax cuts for some of these corporations. And when you really look at what it means for the wage increases that they're referring to, it's a very small share of that total. And so the vast majority of those corporate tax cuts, for example, will end up going back to their shareholders and back to, you know, perhaps it will be pay increases, but it won't be to their rank and file. It will be to their leadership. It will be to the CEOs and managers of those organizations.
Well, the trend in corporate America for 20 to 40 years now has been to maximize shareholder value above all other things, hasn't it?
Well, I think that's certainly the case. And in many ways, managers of corporations have that responsibility to maximize the profitability and the success for their shareholders. But that isn't the responsibility for lawmakers. Lawmakers have a responsibility to their constituents, to the people. And we really had hoped, perhaps naively, that any tax reform effort would be prioritizing the workers and prioritizing the middle class, not prioritizing corporations and the richest among us.
The Oregon Center for Public Policy, where you work, was pretty hard on Greg Walden. He is Oregon's only Republican in Congress and also was the only person, therefore, to vote for the tax legislation. Anything Walden could have done differently, you feel, other than voting with his party?
Well, I think, I mean, at a very base level, Greg Walden is a member of some of the Republican circles that were really directing this bill and identifying what directions it would prioritize. He is one of only hundreds of representatives, however, and you know, we would have loved for him to actually come out publicly, like a number of people in his party did, and vote against the bill, make statements against the bill, noting how it is going to end up hurting Oregonians and only helping some of the richest Oregonians at the end of the day. We would have loved to see that.
Well, more analysis available at the OCPP website. Daniel Hauser is a policy analyst for the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I want to remind folks we did invite the Cascade Policy Institute as well to join the program. They declined. Daniel, thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.